Thank you. Okay, so let's start off with the Planning Commission. Start out with Ed.
Ed Fleischer, District 2.
Scott.
Scott Nelson, District 3.
Don.
Don DeHaan, District 1.
Eric.
Eric Cassino, District 2.
Doug.
Doug Carmen, District 2.
And I'm Jim Simmons from District 3. So I'm looking for an approval of the agenda, please.
Move to approve the agenda.
And I'll second.
All those in favor of approval of the agenda, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? So next on the list is the approval of the meeting minutes for May 5th, 2021 and May 20th, 2021. Any changes or adjustments needed on that? And I have a motion to approve those.
I move to approve the minutes of the May 20 and May 5th meetings.
Thanks, Doug. And a second?
Second.
All those in favor of approval of the meeting minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okie doke. Next item. This is public communication time. Please, for this virtual meeting, please choose to raise your hand option if you wish to address the Planning Commission. If you are dialing in, press 9 to raise your hand. The chair or the host will unmute you when it's your turn to speak. Make sure you also choose number 6 to unmute yourself. 3-minute timer will show on one of the video screens to help keep track of time. If you have issues speaking and being heard, please disconnect from the Zoom meeting and call 360-972-6901 to make your public comments. Just as a reminder, please keep your comments. If you have a comment about the Shoreline Master Program or the Capital Improvement Program, please, did I say that right? No, excuse me. If you have a comment that concerns the public hearing of the Capital Improvement Plan or the wireless code, please save those comments until we get to that public hearing. Otherwise, raise your hand and we will get to you. Patrick Townsend.
Commissioners, good evening and thank you. This is Patrick Townsend. I'm a shoreline property owner here in Thurston County. My comments today are about shoreline stabilization. I just want to make a few statements. This is personal to me. We're engaged right now in a bulkhead removal project to help restore ecological conditions on the shoreline here in Thurston County. These are extensive, difficult, expensive, and time-consuming projects to restore the shoreline to a more natural state. We know that hardened bulkheads are one of the worst ecological impact, have one of the worst ecological impacts in Puget Sound, and removing them is a difficult process. So what we've learned from this process by working with Thurston Conservation District is that there are a lot of barriers to recovering the shoreline. The new SMP is not helping in this particular effort. So the first few comments that I have are that, you know, section 19600-175 about stabilization should be very explicit in some areas. For example, no new hardened bulkhead should be permitted. It's destructive. It's counterproductive to recovery of Puget Sound. There should just be a hard stop on hardened bulkheads. Furthermore, as shoreline property owners address the need to maintain bulkheads, there should not be an expansion of existing bulkheads. In other words, if you're going to repair a bulkhead, which may be necessary, this should not enable expansion of that bulkhead. I know from personal experience, it's possible to deal with a bulkhead and use soft armoring and more ecologically helpful approaches, even if you have a hardened bulkhead. So the other aspect of this is that I strongly believe, as Phyllis has said, from the Sierra Club before, there needs to be a policy of a net gain as opposed to no net loss. No net loss is the horse we rode in for this particular difficulty we have around the ecology of Puget Sound. So there, when you have a project that is related to stabilization, there should be a clear statement of net gain in ecological function as a part of that. So I strongly recommend that that new language get in there. Also, when you go to permit a work on a bulkhead, there should be a requirement to engage with a company that is experienced in soft bulkhead removal and soft bulkhead stabilization techniques, and that should be a requirement before any permit is granted. So I just want to, I know my time is out now, I appreciate your listening, but we should not double down on a failed policy. There's no good outcome in continuing to do something that is a failed policy. I really think that the stabilization section of the new S&P should encourage and incentivize proper behavior when it comes to bulkheads. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And hopefully we can have a better S&P in terms of stabilization.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I got next up is John Woodford.
Commissioners, I support a lot of what Patrick just said, but on the other hand, on eutrophic lakes like Long Lake where I live and so on, we have really a totally different situation. And I know Commissioner Carmen presented material, I don't know, it seems like months ago, and I know that's on the agenda for this evening, but I hope you take a really hard look at alternatives when it comes to eutrophic lakes and so on. It's a very different kind of situation than where Patrick lives up in Boston Harbor on the marine waters. And it's not that I want new armored bulkheads, but soft bulkheads make all kinds of sense, but bulkheads do serve a purpose on the eutrophic lakes. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Woodford. Barry Halverson. Oops, maybe it's me.
No, I think it was me. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah, I just like to ditto what John just said about bulkheads on lakes versus Puget Sound. But I'd also like to extend my appreciation to the six or seven, sometimes seven commissioners. Six of them are on the call tonight that have really, in the last 3 years, worked diligently to move this Shoreline Master Program ahead. And three of them that I know put a lot of effort into reading this document, studying this document, researching this document, and making a lot of very good recommendations and changes to this document. And speaking for the Lake Lawrence community, we really appreciate those efforts and look forward to the final document coming out pretty soon. The last comment I'd like to make is a thank you to Andrew DeFobis for getting back to me on our canal dredging situation. Although Andrew could probably summarize it a lot better than I can, the SMP really doesn't do justice to the dredging situation. It doesn't really define it. It doesn't really provide a lot of really cogent information on which to move forward with a dredging situation. There's a lot of other things that go into that, and them working with the planning folks there provided us some good, useful information, and I just wanted to say thank you. That's all I've got.
Thank you, sir. I'm not any other hands at this time. Is there anybody else that would like to speak during this period? Not seeing anybody raise their hand. We are going to move on. To Andrew, the work session for the Shoreline Master Program.
Okay, great. Good evening, commissioners. Andrew DeFobis, associate planner with Community Planning and Economic Development. So tonight we're going to continue with our review of the SMP. There's really only a couple topics remaining before I turn it back around and present you with a draft that has all of your feedback sewn up and into it. So tonight we're talking about shoreline stabilization, permitting, and development standards, and then time permitting, we'll discuss the SMP appendices B, C, and D. So we'll be looking for specific amendments to the text that you wish to introduce or options that you wish to put in the draft for public hearing. We did receive one comment from a citizen on the SMP ahead of this meeting, and I forwarded that, or I believe Sonia forwarded that to the Planning Commission. It got put online today. Essentially, that person was asking questions about buffers in the SMP and the relationship between the SMP and the critical areas ordinance. So I did respond to that citizen, tried to clarify what is in the draft and let them know that there is some additional language surrounding the topic of CAO and SMP that's going to be coming back in the next version of the draft. So just wanted to give you an update on that. So you should have received the staff memo on shoreline stabilization. As was pointed out, that came out quite a while ago back in March. And then Commissioner Carmen has also provided comments on that staff memo, which were provided to you as well. So the approach tonight is gonna be to let Commissioner Carmen walk us through his comments and you know, take a look at he wrote comments on the memo itself. So we'll look at those and then we can look at the standards in the SMP and see if from any discussion the Planning Commission has, anyone wishes to introduce any amendments to the SMP language. So with that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Carmen, if you wanted to kind of walk us through your comments on that. And then I know you also had comments, you proposed some policies for the draft related to water quality. So we could touch on those as well.
Sure. I think key is starting out with the memo I sent to you, Andrew, and forwarded on to the commission on suggestions for changes in policy within the SMP. There already is a policy in the SMP for water quality. Are you going to bring that up?
I'm going to try to share your memo.
Okay.
This is what was posted on the Planning Commission website. So hopefully it will work.
That's your memo.
Yeah, it's my memo with your comments.
Well, I'm right now talking about my letter to you.
Okay. Okay, great. I will scroll to that.
So I look at the SMP or the Shoreline Master Program as something that should be part of a tool for managing water quality. Because the ultimate goal is to maintain water quality in our community. Shoreline ecological function is only one part of that. It's an awful big document for only one part, but anyway, lakes, I keep talking about separating lakes, rivers, and the marine environment because they are different. And so in a lake, the lake provides many things to the community, as I detailed, and I'm sure you've all read that. But lakes go through a cycle, and at the end, they become a eutrophic lake, and over time, they die, fill up, become a swamp, and are no longer a pretty thing that performs some of these functions. So as we populate the area, we contribute to that eutrophication. We're stormwater's running into the lakes and bringing sediment, trees keep falling and leaves and filling it up. So in order to augment or help with water quality long-term, I thought that we should add to the existing policy within the SMP and I'll just read them. Scroll down a little bit, Andrew, and you can see them. In addressing eutrophic lakes, you add a policy that says prevent the introduction of sediment in eutrophic lakes from wetlands encroachment and shoreline erosion, which accelerates the aging of these lakes, degrades water quality, impacts aesthetic qualities, recreational opportunities, and causes adverse effects on the shoreline ecological function. So we need to reduce the amount of sediments in the lake, or the introduction of sediments. And then stormwater runoff, another policy. Stormwater outfalls into the rivers, streams, lakes, and marine environments should be eliminated and diverted into settling ponds to reduce organic harmful chemicals and waste from entering these water bodies and degrading water quality and contributing to algae growth. I've made the statement that I've gotten from the stream team that 75% of the pollution in Puget Sound is from stormwater itself. So by adding these two policies, should give us flexibility in section 600 to make some changes from at least from getting sediment within in the lake to reduce that sediment. And in your memo now, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. Just go to the top?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
The first part, you're talking about impact to property and wind and wave action. It says right in that document. So that paragraph, which is a quote from the SMP, opens it up to wave action and impacts to property. So it gives us an in to talk about just erosion. That second one, I don't know whether you, can you open that second?
I was not able to. I wasn't sure if it was just like a blank.
No, that's right. It's a blank one. It's not. Tried to open it and I finally got it open. It was empty.
Okay. All right.
So you can scroll to the next page.
Here.
I'm only going to point out those things that Andrew put in here that gives us some openings to do different things.
And I can hover and hopefully bring up the text and I hope y'all can see that.
Great. So it's this section here says to prevent single family residents occupied prior to January 1, 1992. My question is there is what's the difference between prior to January 1, 1992 and after?
Right. I'm not sure where that date, I'm not sure why that date is in the WAC or sorry, in the RCW, but it is directly from the RCW. So it does not prevent newer structures from achieving shoreline stabilization if it is warranted, but it states that, you know, structures that were occupied prior to that date get a preference for permit issuance. And so we put that in the draft.
Yeah. So was there an updated draft in January of 1992?
I think there was some change in state law that occurred referencing that date. I'm not sure why, but you know, that is, I could look into it. I just know this is what
what the law says, there's not much we can do about that.
Right. So.
That was just a point of question.
Yeah. I don't think it does not prevent newer structures from getting shoreline stabilization. It's just saying it's making up. There was some point, you know, line in the sand at some point, and I don't know if there was a lawsuit or case law or something that promulgated that, but that's what we have to work with.
Okay. And next one, erosion of the shoreline in a eutrophic lake contributes to the decay of water quality in the natural environment, as well as the aging of the lake. thus the reference to the issue, preference to issue permits in a eutrophic lake. Mm-hmm. And so I'm encouraging, you know, in eutrophic lakes, I think we need to create a difference between, you know, a pristine mountain lake and a eutrophic lake. They need different things in order to maintain the water quality. And then the next one is that that's just, we agreed that we wouldn't require a cup.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was just a point.
Yeah. And just to, so that everyone is aware, you know, since this memo was written, and then since we had the last discussion about stabilization, I have made that change to the draft SMP. So 19,600,175 now currently, it no longer requires a conditional use permit. It essentially says, if you are a normal protective bulkhead, protect an existing single family residence, you are exempt from an SDP requirement per state law. Any other shoreline stabilization would be an SDP simply because it would not be exempt. But I took out the conditional use permit requirement.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the next one.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, wait. Some of these, it's strange. You have to put your cursor just right to open.
It's a, so maybe just seeing what it says in the section. It says, master programs are instructed to allow modifications that are appropriate for the type of shoreline and environmental conditions of the site. So the point here is that it allows for us to differentiate. It gives us flexibility.
Yep.
We could say in a eutrophic lake or in an urban lake or something like that, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And then your comment about not specific, I mean, not your comment, but this paragraph. Since the guidelines are not specifics to shoreline environment, we should be able to differentiate where appropriate and justified to protect water quality and the health of the water body. The assumption that not being specific means it applies to all water bodies is only one interpretation. I don't interpret it that way. It's just not specific because it didn't give guidelines.
Right.
So we can create our own guidelines.
Yeah, and I think that it's sort of my approach is to see what sort of changes to the draft come out of this discussion with the Planning Commission, put that into the public hearing draft, and then, you know, ecology will react to that and we will have some fresh take on this issue from them on it. So that's the plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, this is really a big financial burden to have a homeowner who's needs to redo a bulkhead or something and has to go hire consultants in order to put in justification for all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping, or not hoping, but I assume the law actually requires this because it's, you know, sometimes, you know, my philosophy is government causes more inflation than anything else. And it's because of a lot of regulations that require people to spend more money to do things that really aren't necessarily that important.
Mm-hmm. So this language here is directly from the WAC. So the WAC does require geotechnical analysis for new shoreline stabilization, hard stabilization. It does not require it for replacement. The draft SMP does require it for replacement. So that is an instance where the draft SMP is currently more restrictive than state law.
Yeah, so my recommendation here would be not to require it for existing or replacement.
Yeah.
Because again, that's a big expense.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, that's something that the rest of the Planning Commission could choose to weigh in on now, or we could wait until we are looking at the actual standards. But I certainly expect that issue will come up when we do that.
I agree with Doug on that, especially because even when we look at things like danger trees and that kind of stuff,
if there's a imminent danger from a tree, you don't have to hire an arborist to come out and tell you that it's going to die in the next 3 years. You're allowed to take care of it right then and there because it's a danger. So I think that a similar situation can be applied in here.
Okay. I do think if the majority of the Planning Commission wants that change made, then that should be a fairly easy change to make in the draft. So I'm going to open up my screen so I can see more of your faces. The proposal here would be in the draft SMP to not require a geotechnical analysis for replacement of an existing, assuming it's going to be the same size and it's not an expansion. And so is that something that you all would like me to put in the draft? Okay, I'm seeing nods and
yeah.
Okay, great. So I am happy to make that change per Planning Commission direction, and we can keep moving. Okay. Back to you, Commissioner.
Another use of the word uses. In other words, you can protect a use, not just a residence.
Okay.
Again, but this is for replacement, so it's...
Yeah, here I think, again, you're pointing out...
Another reference to use.
Yeah.
Because we used the word use before, I'm suggesting that we would add the word use here, protecting existing family home, comma, use, comma, appurtenant structures.
Guidelines. So when we get into the draft, let's look at that when we have the draft actually pulled up, and if you want to wordsmith that and the Planning Commission wants to wordsmith that, we can do that. So. Okay, great. I'll just note it down for now. Okay. All right. So moving on here to, again, okay. And so we kind of covered this one. This was where you made the comment about requiring geotech for replacement. And I'll go ahead and make that change.
So I apologize, guys, but we're getting close to 7 o'clock. So yep. You can come back to this at the end of our public hearings. But I think we're going to need to, I've got a couple minutes to 7.
Yep.
So we're going to need to move. And again, we can come back.
Yep. Sounds good. Okay. I will see you guys on the backside of your hearings.
Okay. Let me get the right one here. So today we're having a public hearing. Oh, I'm going to call this book. Oh, not yet. Anyway. Today we're having a public hearing on the capital improvement program. With some minor amendment. Today we are here to hold a public hearing on a minor amendment to the Thurston County Capital Improvement Program, which is Appendix G of the Thurston County Comprehensive Plan. The amendment adds 2 capital facilities to the Capital Improvement Program for 2021 and 2020 through 2026. This is a virtual public hearing. Those wishing to testify have joined by Zoom, phone, emailed in comment or mailed in comment. If you wish to testify, please choose the raise your hand option. If you are dialing in, press 9 to raise your hand. The chair will call your name and unmute you when it's your turn to speak. Make sure you also choose number 6 to unmute yourself. If you have issues speaking or being heard, please disconnect from the Zoom meeting and call 360-972-6901. Each person will have 3 minutes to testify. I'll be calling out names for oral testimony. When you hear your name, please unmute yourself to testify. Time may not be given to another person. When testifying, please provide your name and address for the record. Ask Sonia to review the public comment timer. And you can see it there. It's on the right of my screen. It'll go from, it's a 3-minute timer. It'll go from green to yellow. Yellow signifies you have 30 seconds left. And when it gets to the red, we'll ask you to wrap up your last thoughts. So we're going to open this public hearing with a staff presentation and ask Jennifer to provide background information. Oh, wait, Becca, we need to do the public comment.
Well, we can,
we can open the hearing for public comment after I do my brief presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Just setting it up for context. Again, this first public hearing is only on the amendments to the capital improvement program. So that's the only thing we're going to be taking public comment on, and it should be pretty quick. And then we'll move and close this hearing and open our second public hearing tonight on wireless code. So just to set that expectation for everyone. But again, this first public hearing is about the county's proposal to add two projects to the 6-year capital improvement program. And again, that's the program within the county comprehensive plan that describes all of the capital projects the county may expend funds, public funds on in the coming 6-year time period. Any amendment to the capital improvement program has to go through this legislative process, including planning commission review, which is why we're here tonight. And the capital improvement program can be amended whenever we have a major budget amendment at the county, which is what's going on right now. We keep the budget and the capital improvement program aligned, but the capital improvement program is a financial plan. It is not a budget. So the numbers in that program are usually estimates. The two projects that are proposed to be added to the plan are a lease and tenant improvements at the 3000 Pacific Avenue building in the city of Olympia. And then also the purchase of buildings in the city of Tumwater, known as the Mottman Complex, and full project descriptions and anticipated costs were provided in the packet. Costs are estimates. And both these added projects are intended to help implement our capital facilities plan, which anticipates the need for additional space for county administrative offices. This is described in Chapter 6 of our comprehensive plan. So these two projects are being added in order to implement those goals. After the hearing tonight, I'm hopeful to get a recommendation from the Planning Commission that I can then take to the Board of County Commissioners for their consideration. Note, there is one small update to the project descriptions that were provided in the packet in Table 7-2 expenditures. The project locations are listed as Olympia and Tumwater UGAs, but they're actually in the cities. So we'll update that and fix that error when we move this forward if we get a Planning Commission recommendation tonight. The county has not received any written comment ahead of tonight's hearing. So that concludes my presentation. You're welcome to call on folks now.
Thanks, Jennifer. If you'd like to speak on this subject, please raise your hand. Give your name and address for the record. And let's see if anybody's out there. I'm not seeing anybody wishing to speak. Oh, it's like I saw you there. John Pettit, I saw your hand go up for a sec. Is that, would you like to speak?
Yes, I do want to speak. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, my name is John Pettit. I live at 9725 Rich Road, Olympia, Washington, 98501. I'm kind of actually surprised that, considering the nature of what is being considered, I'm very surprised that there has been virtually no public input from as far as opportunity to really bring the public into this process. That is one of the under your Section 6 of the Capital Facility Plan. Including the public in all phases of the capital facilities plan, and that would have to include amendments also. Clearly there has been, this has been almost a silent issue done in the dark. And I think that by presenting it the way which it's being presented, it's like you guys really don't matter as a planning commission, you're a rubber stamp and nobody's really gonna care what you say. At least that's how I feel staff is treating you. And I think that there's some important factors involved here. I'm going to go through just a few of the things which I think is very important. First of all, part of the capital facilities plan under this chapter is to avoid expensive remedial action. This plan was just approved less than 6 months ago. They had opportunity for the public to be involved. And now, what do we have? We got to have this through today. It's unreasonable. Are you actually informed about all the aspects here? You already know from watching and being participating in the community, you already know that the county has not had enough money to maintain its current facilities. Those facilities won't be eliminated. They're going to continue to exist, and they're going to continue to cost money to be updated. The current facilities need to be taken care of. But with this plan, you'd be moving forward with another 140,000 square feet of operation and maintenance cost, which under any normal level, by the state standards, Office of Fiscal Management would estimate it to be about $1,150,000 per year. I see that you have Robin Campbell there, and I see that she could certainly provide you with the fact that the county has more than enough money for anything they need to do except take care of the current courthouse facilities. So you should look into the plan. Why is this so necessary? Why do you need a decision tonight? Because they move forward on items without actually asking. So please put it to the side. Take some time, get all the information you can, because quite honestly, it's a very bad thing to do, a very bad program, and you should be entitled to get the information before making decisions in a 10-minute time frame. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Pettit. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? I have John Woodford.
Hello again, commissioners. John Woodford, I live at 7541 Holmes Island Road, Olympia. I would have really not paying much attention to this, as I'm sure most people haven't. Mr. Pettit kind of referred to this to the same thing, and what is the meaning of this before the Planning Commission. But the one item on it that struck me as something that just flew out of the blue in the last few days is the 3000 Pacific Avenue lease and tenant improvements. Where did this come from? I mean, just all of a sudden, this building is being considered for moving the bulk of county offices, everything except for courts and court-related items, to a site out on a kind of nondescript part of Pacific Avenue, if you excuse the reference for the neighbors out there. But $7 million in tenant improvements for that building seems just outrageous. It's got to be, I assume, a temporary location. Civic buildings should, I'm an architect, civic buildings should play an important part in every community. And in a sense, the courthouse complex does now, although it's, you're outgrowing it and whatever, but to just pick a building because it's available, there must be dozens of buildings available in the Olympia area if you're looking for a short-term arrangement. I know the state is cutting back on office space, and it has to be true all over the place, but where did this come from? It's really out of the blue. I'd like to hear some rationale for why it's worth $7 million. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else that would like to speak? Oops. Christy.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm going to jump in on this capital improvement program too. I unfortunately have not studied it in detail, but just what I've heard this evening, $7 million on tenant improvements, and I'm a finance manager my entire career, that's a lot of money on tenant improvements, again, if it's not meant to be a permanent building. So I would also echo the previous callers that, you know, perhaps a deeper dive needs to be put into this capital improvement plan before it's passed on. So those are my thoughts on this evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Christy. Anybody else would like to share with us? I'm not seeing anybody's hands. Is there anybody else that would like to share with us? Okay, I believe the next step is to close the public hearing now at this point, and then we will open it up for discussion within our members. Anybody have something they'd like to add?
I did meant to introduce Assistant County Manager Robin Campbell, who's here to help answer questions as well.
Well, Robin, maybe you can answer some of the questions about the financing before we get started with the with speaking among ourselves.
I'd be happy to answer questions about the financing. The proposal for the building has been discussed by the Board of County Commissioners in many work sessions over the last few months. As you know, we are running out of space at the courthouse on the campus. And the county had proposed having a ballot measure for a new courthouse that was removed from the ballot. It would have been on the ballot about a year ago. And the Board of County Commissioners removed that. However, the county government still needs space. So we were tasked with looking around Olympia to see what we can find. It must be within city limits, according to state law, our seat of government. And we were asked to look and see what was available in Olympia that would meet the county needs. Only two properties were found that are currently available and had sufficient square footage in a configuration that would work. And the 3000 Pacific building was one of them. The owner is currently in the process of renovating the building and would have built it to suit rather than paying a higher price for the lease. We negotiated a lower lease price over time and agreed that we would pay for the tenant improvements up front. They are estimated to be $7 million, and that's to configure space for the assessor, auditor, and treasurer, our building permit center, and for the Board of County Commissioners, our Human Resources Office, Information Technology Office, Financial Services, and the Board of Equalization. I think that's all of the offices and departments that would move in. And we're currently working with each office and department to determine what their needs are. So the $7 million is for walls and counters and furniture and wiring and all the improvements that we need in the building to be able to make it operational for all of those sectors of government. The annual lease cost, we're looking at a 7-year lease. The annual average dollars, it's for 90,000 square feet. And that is inclusive of the types of things that Mr. Pettit was talking about. It includes janitorial, utilities, and building maintenance over time. So I'd be happy to answer any specific questions that you might ask. But again, the board has held work sessions over the last at least 2 months that are open and recorded. They're available on YouTube if you'd like to watch any of them. But this has been discussed over the last few months.
Jennifer, I have a procedural question for you. We're at 7:15 and we're supposed to move into our next public hearing.
Agenda times are but a guide, Jim. So we can finish this work session and then move into the next public hearing, or as the chair, of course, you can change around the order. But the idea was to get through this one and close this out and then move forward to the next public hearing.
That works. Thank you. Okay, so let's continue on. Any other thoughts about this?
I have quite a few thoughts about this. I am concerned about time because I have a full page of stuff that I would like to go through. So I'm not sure how you want to handle that.
Well, I guess I'll leave that to Jennifer too.
I think to follow the existing agenda, we continue with this work session and then have potentially a recommendation from the Planning Commission on this item and then move to the next public hearing.
Okay. Robin, could you tell me just to start out with, it seemed like you cut out for a little bit. What was the negotiated price per square foot for the atrium?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have that available, but I could certainly look it up and get it for you. I think that starts out at $1,750 if we pay for our own tenant improvements.
So $1,750, all right.
I think so, but I'm gonna verify that.
Well, one of my first and biggest concern is that when we talk about capital facilities, generally that means we own something in the end. And so even when you look at chapter 6 and it explains exactly what a capital facility is, renting and leasing and borrowing and not owning is not really part of anything that is described in capital facilities. So when we're talking about $4.5 million lease with $7 million worth of tenant improvements, at the end of 7 years, we don't have anything for that. So we're gonna spend almost $12 million and have nothing for that. That's a real concern for me, that we're going to define this as a capital facility or a capital improvement and we don't own anything.
So if I may, the source of the funding, the $7 million is REIT.
And REIT 1 or REIT 2 or both?
I'm sorry? The
REIT 1 or REIT 2 or both?
Only REIT 1. Okay. It would not be an appropriate use of REIT 2. Since it is for county space. Mm-hmm. So REIT 1, and as I'm sure you're aware, state law requires that if you're going to spend REIT money, it's got to be in the capital improvement plan. And we have a legal opinion from the Attorney General that use of REIT for tenant improvements in space that the county will not own in the end is an appropriate and legal use of the fund. And that's why you see it in front of you today.
So we can spend $7 million on somebody else's building and give it back to them in 7 years, and that's not considered a gift of public funds?
Correct. That's correct.
I'm sure that the lawyers looked at it and saw it that way, but it sure doesn't feel right from the public end of things. I do have some other concerns about the cost of this particular facility. When I look at chapter 6 of the comp plan, the objectives 1D about paying for capital facilities, and policy 7 is to provide capital facilities at the lowest possible cost. And then goal 3, objective 3B, is to be frugal with use of public monies. I read that, and then I went last night and I got on CBA, the Commercial Brokers Association, commercial MLS, and I was looking at other properties that were available in the Olympia city limits. And the atrium right now is listed on there at $24 a foot plus $8 a foot triple net. And when I look at everything else that is available, most of the other buildings that are there come in at between $15 and $21 a foot. And some of those are full service leases without the triple net. And the only thing that is even close to the price of the atrium is a little bit of medical office space at Memorial Clinic. When we're closer to $32 a foot, and maybe we're getting some sort of break because of this tenant improvement reduction on the lease, but the numbers still wouldn't pencil out quite well. This really feels like Waldorf Astoria kind of pricing for for something that we're going to be using temporarily. This is not something that we're going to keep forever. This is not an art project. This is really expensive office space. And moreover, it's a lot of office space. It's in chapter 7, table 7.1, when it talks about the inventory that the county already has, when we look at building 1, 4, 5, and 6, which is basically the Capitol campus without the courthouses and the court facilities, we have about 94,000 square feet between those buildings. This is adding another 90,000 square feet on its own. So it's almost doubling. This one project is almost doubling the amount of square feet that the Capitol campus is already using outside of the courts. And that's basically the departments that you said are going to be using this facility. But then I also look and Chapter 6F, the county government facilities there, it says that government administration, that type of space, needs a gross square feet of 219 gross square feet per full-time employee. Well, that would be about 430 employees. I don't know how many people work for the county right now, but the idea that there's going to be 430 employees and maybe 422 employees at the atrium, 430 at the Capitol or the courthouse campus, I don't think we have that many people. I think that this whole idea that we need this is antiquated. I mean, the idea that we need it was based on work done in 2018. I think that need in 2018 was overstated. I'm sure there's a lot of debate over whether it was not overstated in 2018, but post-COVID, with as much work from home as we have, as empty as the parking lot looks whenever I show up at the courthouse now, I'm having a really, really hard time believing that the 2018 need for more space for the county is still applicable today. And I wouldn't want to say that people want this because they want something new and shiny, but it kind of feels like that. When the iPhone 6 came out and my kid had an iPhone 5, all of a sudden that iPhone 5 didn't work very well. And as the person paying for the phone, it was kind of irritating. And the other part about this that I don't like is that in Chapter 6, Goal 3, Policy 4, is that we should be looking for alternatives. And we in Appendix G, it already shows that we have $5 million scheduled for 2022 and $45 million for 2023 for county courthouse infrastructure upgrades. I think it's about time we do some upgrades on the county courthouse infrastructure, but doing that and doubling our square feet and paying Taj Mahal type prices, like we're all going to move into the Waldorf Astoria, it seems huge. It seems way unnecessary. It seems very expensive. And at the end of 7 years, some building owner has just the nicest building in town and we have nothing for it. I'm going to have a very hard time. Well, I know that I'm not going to be able to give a yay vote on adding this to the plan. That's all I have for right now.
Thanks, Eric.
I agree a lot with what Eric said, but the other thing that really hit me is I've been at that building and there's no parking. And I thought the county courthouse was existing courthouse was bad. Every time I go there to go to a meeting, I drive around and around and around. Well, guess what?
It's even worse than that, because the parking that they do have isn't enough for 90,000 square feet of general administration, according to Olympia City Code.
Right. So
we wouldn't even be able to get all the parking we want. We'd be out of compliance with Olympia City Code on parking with it.
No, it was Ed. My comment, you know, I've said this before when this has come up with this capital facilities plan. I mean, I thought Eric had a lot of good things to say there, and he'd done some research and whatever. I've always felt this shouldn't be coming to the Planning Commission at all. This is a question for the elected officials. It's a tax and spending question for our three commissioners. The capital plan is big and thick and has taken, you know, hundreds of hours from all sorts of staff that work for the commission. And, you know, apparently this is what our three elected commissioners want us to do right now. But I mean, I'm not comfortable doing this at all. I would sort of lean towards if they. I guess I have a question would be, if we don't forward this, does the commissioners need it to make their decision? And secondly, I would lean more towards forwarding it to the county commissioners without recommendation.
I think the county commissioners, they take our recommendations and they either accept them or they throw them out all the time. So if we send them a recommendation that says we don't want to put this on, they can decide they're going to put it on anyways.
That's right. The county commissioners have the legislative discretion. The planning commission recommendations are advisory to the Board of County Commissioners. So they have discretion to go in the direction that they feel they want to go. But part of hosting this process at the planning commission level is to have this exact discussion, provide that opportunity for public input, and to pass that perspective up to the plan to the Board of County Commissioners.
Well, I guess my other comment would be, I mean, I know that the county commissioners, both the current ones and their previously, have been looking at replacing all sorts of options about the courthouse and county space or whatever, and have done a lot of looking into that. I mean, I don't feel that I know enough about the needs of the county, the various departments and the space requirements and that to make a reasoned judgment on whether this additional office space is needed or not. So that, anyway, that's that's my only comment.
From what I've seen and listened to over the last number of years on this subject, I believe that there is a need for additional office space because of the courts. But how much office space, and especially with COVID and the changes that are going to happen, office space right now, you know, it's something that I think should be delayed or looked at differently.
Well, Jennifer, it sounds like we need more discussion on this. What is the plan here, or what are our options?
Well, your options are to not provide a recommendation tonight. We do have a work session scheduled with the board this tomorrow to go over, you know, what happened at this. They want to have additional discussion as well before they're in a position to set their own public hearing or take action. You could make a motion to forward without recommendation, stating some concerns. You could make a motion to recommend against adding, and again, there's two projects here. We've only discussed one. Or you could make a motion to forward them with your recommendation. So I think it would be helpful to this project in general. There's been a lot of work done. There's been, you know, it hasn't been done in the dark. It hasn't been done in a black box. There's been a lot of staff work done, analysis done, and county commissioner discussion done to date, in addition to putting it on our webpage and the typical noticing we do in the 20 days before this hearing. And it's timely to get this done in time with the spring budget amendments, because that's the only way the county would be able to potentially spend those REIT funds that Robin mentioned on these facilities, is by adding it to the capital improvement program. Now this spring, in aligned with the county budget amendment process, which is ongoing. So there's a little bit of a time factor here with this, but you're free to make whatever motion you see fit on this topic. And I can give that to the board tomorrow at their meeting.
Don?
Thanks. So one of the options we would have would be to split this apart and vote as a recommendation on Mottman and to not recommend Pacific if we think that it's not a good and prudent use of public funds.
That could be your motion. I mean, you're welcome to make the recommendation that you as a planning commission want to make. There, it's provided as a package, but you can make that motion.
Robin, could you tell us just briefly what the purchase price of Mottman is and what its assessed value is and what tenant improvements would be needed for it, just for review?
The purchase price of Mottman is $5.6 million for the complex, plus the county agreed to pay the broker fee. So the assessed value came in at $5.7 million. And we have not started mapping out what the tenant improvements are yet. But the auditor needs more space. We're going to use it for the elections center and the ballot center. And she needs at least double the space for that. And then we will also move both our records facility and our facilities group. Both of those are currently in lease space. We will move them out of lease space into these buildings as the current tenants, their leases expire over the next 3 to 4 years.
I would be prone to make a motion to kill the atrium and postpone decisions on Mottman at this particular time.
I would second that.
So I'm just trying to figure that out in my mind. Can you kind of like clean it up, or you know what I mean?
I would move that the Planning Commission recommend to the Board of County Commissioners that we do not move forward with any business on the atrium, and that we delay a decision on Mottman until another work session can be completed.
And I heard somebody second that earlier.
I'll second that.
That is correct.
Okay. So is there any other discussion on that? So all those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed?
No.
So the ayes have it. And would you like to do a minority opinion there, Ed?
I don't think so.
I think he needs more than one to do a minority opinion for the rules of procedure.
Okay, so I guess that's that. And
thank you.
Thanks, Robin, for coming. And hopefully we'll sort this out somewhere. Okay, so we're gonna move on to the next public hearing, which is the wireless code. Today, the Planning Commission will hold a public hearing on a proposed ordinance to repeal and replace the existing wireless communication facilities and antenna support structures codes, as well as amendments to definitions and special use chapters of Thurston County Code. Proposed amendments are intended to meet federal laws and simplify code language. This is a virtual public hearing. Those wishing to testify may join by Zoom or phone. Some citizens have already provided comments by mail or email. If you wish to testify at today's hearing, please choose the raise your hand option in Zoom. If you are dialing in, press 9 to raise your hand. I will call your name and unmute you when it is your turn to speak. Make sure you choose option 6 to unmute yourself. If you have issues speaking or being heard, please disconnect from the Zoom meeting and call 360-972-6901. Each person will have 3 minutes to testify. We'll be calling out your names for oral testimony. When you hear your name, please unmute yourself to testify. Time may not be given to another person. When testifying, please provide your name and address for the record. And we're going to ask Sonia to review. Oops, no, we don't need to review the timer anymore. We're going to open this up. So we have a staff presentation by Caitlin. Could you provide us with the background?
Yes, thank you and good evening. Staff provided you with documents from previous work sessions prior to this hearing, as well as previous public comments and a summary of some of those comments, and new comments that we received prior to tonight's hearing. After tonight's public hearing, staff plans to come back to the Planning Commission with a summary of public comments received, the potential path forward on issues raised, and provide an opportunity for Planning Commission deliberation. Prior to beginning the public hearing tonight, I would like to have Ken Fellman, the county consultant on wireless facilities, touch on a few items that have been noted as public concern. Some of those include locating small wireless facilities in the rights-of-way and the associated public notice, as well as radio frequency emission testing and safety. Go ahead, Ken.
Thank you, Kate. Mr. Chairman, commissioners, nice to be with you again this evening. I will be very brief. I know the primary purpose for tonight is to hear from interested members of the public about these issues. But in particular, with some of the issues that have been raised in some of the written comments so far, I was asked just to briefly address a couple of things. When it comes to this, what we call small cell facilities in the rights of way, and where they get located, how close to a home they can be, what kind of notice is provided. The code is one potential vehicle to address those issues, but we want to make sure the Planning Commission and the public understands there are others. Under the existing code and after a new code is adopted, an entity that wants to locate these facilities in the public rights of way are still going to have to come to the county and enter into, we're not sure what we're going to call it yet, whether it might be a franchise agreement or a master permit agreement or a license agreement, but they're still going to need to get permission in a general sense for a grant of authority to use the rights of way, and then site-specific authority for each place they want to locate one of these facilities. And some of the issues relating to notice, some of the issues relating to design, both how the facility itself will look and how it gets space, how close it can be to a lot line or the front of a person's home, are not necessarily dealt with in the code in every instance. They can be dealt with and often are dealt with in these other agreements that city or county staff rather will address through its regulatory and administrative process. So the issues that you've heard about and probably will continue to hear about are certainly valid issues, but we want you to understand that the code is not always the, and is not in this case, the only way they can be addressed. And there are times when the county needs to make a judgment call, and this is part of the reason that your recommendation is sought. Does it make more sense to put these in the code, or does it make more sense to keep them kind of in the form of an administrative regulation or a standard permit agreement that the county would use so that staff would have more flexibility to deal with changing conditions and to basically improve on some of these processes? This is all new stuff. And once we start seeing deployment, I guarantee you every community that starts this starts seeing there's a way to do it better, or there's a way to tweak a process and make it work more effectively. And one of the reasons that we don't put everything in the code and we leave some of this to the administrative process is to provide for that flexibility to more nimbly respond to some of these issues. So keep that in mind. Regarding radio frequency emissions, this is an issue that comes up in every community that addresses this kind of siting. What I would tell you is there is federal preemption. The federal statute preempts the vast majority of local regulatory authority over radio frequency emissions, siting related to radio frequency emissions. You may hear that the county code isn't going far enough, that there's more that you might be able to do. And I would tell you this, the place where I start is I will make a recommendation to staff and to you for a certain level of regulatory oversight that I can reasonably assure you this will keep you out of trouble. You will not get sued if you regulate up to this point, or if you do, you are likely to prevail. Then there's a gray area, and it can be a large gray area in some cases where you might hear, well, some community in California did this, or some community in New York did this, and maybe they haven't been sued over it yet. And frankly, I really don't have a dog in the hunt. I'm here to help you manage this process in the best way that you can. And if after you hear all the testimony, you direct staff or want to make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners that we think you should be more aggressive, my advice may be the county is exposed to more legal liability by doing that. But if that's the way that the county commissioners decide to go, they can certainly go that way. And then, of course, there's the other extreme where some of the regulations, I may say, I can almost guarantee that you're going to get sued if you do that and you will lose. So keep in mind when you hear about radio frequency emissions and how far the county can go in its oversight, there is there is a well-established, recognized way that you can regulate up to a point that seems to be accepted by most local governments and most applicants, and avoids litigation and legal challenges. And when you do more, you expose the county to more risk. We can have those discussions, and we'll be happy to respond to your questions when we get them about, you know, where those lines are and how far you might be able to go and what the levels of legal risk are. So I wanted to lay the foundation for those two issues, and like you, look forward to hearing the feedback we're going to get from the public this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Feldman. Anything you'd like to add, Kaylin?
Nope, that was all I had to say for now.
Okay, so we're gonna move into the testimony piece of this. Is there anyone out there that would like to share with us? There they come, Rebecca Campbell. Please unmute yourself. There you go. Go ahead, Rebecca. We're not getting anything. Can you try again, Rebecca? Okay, Rebecca, we're going to come back to you. Hopefully try either dialing in or we'll get this going. Christy.
Good evening, commissioners. Thank you again. I like the gray area. I'll just state that right up front. I think there is lots of opportunity for us to have a wireless code that will meet everybody's needs in the county. So first of all, I'm requesting that you send the current draft wireless code back to the planning department and do not send it to the Board of County Commissioners. Secondly, require that a citizens advisory group be engaged to work with the planning department staff to incorporate the advisory group's recommendations into the wireless code. Third, that the planning department design a wireless code that includes safe and equitable protection for the citizens of Thurston County. All of this can be accomplished. I will take a little bit of issue with Mr. Feldman. All of this can be accomplished and be FCC compliant. Fourth, develop a code which does not preempt the rights of local jurisdiction. The United States Congress has long recognized the rights of local governments to manage local public rights of way and zoning. It is all of our responsibility to exercise that right for the benefit of Thurston County residents. There is language within the Federal Communications Commission 2018 ruling referencing county localities' authority to establish guidance for the procedural rules outlined in the Telecommunications Act. I also disagree. You know, code equals permit. And I've watched how diligently you have all gone through line by line by line of the Shoreline Master Plan. The wireless code deserves that same kind of detailed review. There are citizens in Thurston County who are willing and ready to assist with drafting a code which will stand for years to come. The intent is to develop a code that will avoid conflict, unnecessary and costly legal proceedings by both the citizens and the county. The intent is for a code which will allow for technology to be implemented in a manner which is transparent and safe. This technology requires safeguards, independent third-party review, and ongoing oversight funded with fair and reasonable application, permit, and routine license fees. Professionals are required annually to pay a fee, right? Doctors have to renew their licenses and continue with their education to be to practice every year. Sorry, I guess I'm done. I think you've heard my 4 points. Thank you very much for listening.
I have a phone number that ends in 0356. You're up.
Hello there, Josh Stottlemyre. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead, Josh.
Josh Stottlemyre, 11204 Chaucer Lane, Olympia. I represent a group called Thurston County Citizens for Sensible Wireless Code. The goal of the code rewrite was to bring the code into compliance and give permit staff clear guidance. Unfortunately, the draft code does neither very well and needs significant work before going to the BOCC. License agreements, which Mr. Fellman referred to, have their uses but are not subject to public review and therefore are not a good vehicle for accountability. A couple of things to point out. First, the rules for a small wireless facility in the right-of-way on a new structure are basically non-existent in the draft code. There are some rules for size of the antenna and equipment boxes, but literally nothing for setbacks, spacing, minimum heights, placements, etc. We asked the staff about this, and the response was, and I quote, "It's very possible it was forgotten." This is understandable given the complexity of the code and the FCC rules, but it has to be addressed. We can't have the Wild West for wireless companies in the right of way. You could end up with dozens of new poles on the same block, all spaced differently with different heights, different designs, placed in front of picture windows or too close to a driveway. Small wireless facilities ranges are in miles. There is no need for them to be even close to houses. While the draft code may bring us into compliance with the rules wireless companies want, it is out of compliance with the rules meant to protect citizens and the environment. The FCC sets limits on RF radiation exposure. The draft code only requires a statement of facilities safety by an engineer hired by or on the staff of the wireless company. Facility safety is very different than verifying on-location exposure levels are safe, which must be tested to assess. Compliance with this rule is not optional, and it's the rule you should be most concerned about. It must be addressed in the code. There are also several circumstances that an environmental assessment must be completed for small wireless facilities in the right of way, which should trigger SEPA and move it from an administrative decision into a hearing examiner process. That's also not in the code. The draft also asks the wireless companies to attest to compliance with building codes, state and federal laws, licensings, etc., without requiring proof or verification or even listing what is required so the staff could verify it. In court cases throughout the U.S., small wireless facilities are being found lacking FCC-required licenses, NEPA checklists, environmental assessments, with applicants falsely claiming exemption. Structures are regularly found not to meet electrical and structural codes or are in excess of FCC safe RF exposure limits, especially where facility signals overlap or are close to people. We want proof, verification, testing, and inspections, not attestations. We need a citizens advisory board to help with code development, mandatory RF safety testing by the county before and after install and periodically, notification and comment periods for all new applications, gaps in coverage requirements, significant setbacks from all dwellings. We need prioritized locations with residential areas being lowest priority, and we need compliance with all FCC rules, not just the ones wireless companies want. If you do not respect people's homes and neighborhoods with significant setbacks and ample notification and ability to comment, the county will be inundated with angry calls and lawsuits from citizens and homeowner associations, which come with real damages.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up your thoughts here. Your 3 minutes have passed.
Yep. Two small things. Lawsuit from wireless companies only come with an order of compliance. There's no monetary damages, but there's monetary damages from your citizens. To help the county, we have hired a top wireless attorney to do a code review and detail any legal or compliance and other pitfalls with the draft code. Unfortunately, that was delayed, and we will be submitting that as soon as tomorrow for your consideration. Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Sue up.
Good evening, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're good.
Okay, good. This is Sue Danver. I live at 7106 Foothill Loop Southwest, Olympia, 98512. And Christy and Josh have spoken at length and in greater detail than I could. They're the experts, but I have grave concerns as of the code that exists right now. I will get more specific. They went into the larger legal ramifications, but I have chosen not to have a 5G phone. I choose less stress for my life over speed and convenience. I love my neighborhood with all facilities underground, no wires, no poles. I appreciate the view from my picture window out onto forest and the streets, but mostly forest. But as I read the code and of 8 houses in my cul-de-sac, I understand that lawns are preferred over trees. And I'm the one of 8 houses that have a lawn. And I have a right-of-way, probably 5 feet, a ditch and next to the road. And I suspect if and I can't determine by the code, that I will have one of these small wireless facilities that I don't need, and I don't even know if my cul-de-sac needs. But I'm not sure that's considered when a company comes in. So I went to the code last night, and it's very confusing. 110% of this and blah, 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 and it could look like this, and I don't know how tall it is. I don't know what kind of surroundings it will be around it, but I know it will be right in my view shed. And I'm not using a phone, and I don't want to use the phone. I'm not alone. There will be thousands of people in Thurston County that will have the same situation. And they're oblivious to this right now. We are all overwhelmed by what's happened in the last year. And most people are unaware of this decision that's being made. One concern I have is administrative decisions. I run into administrative decisions on permits, and you get the permit, they get a temporary permit, and then the administration goes out and makes others' decisions without not consulting the citizen, and they are made without our participation. That's what I've experienced with the housing developments. Will that be the experience with this? So I support the Citizens for Sensible Wireless Code and all their recommendations. This is serious. And what will happen once it's passed? Can we change it? Can we revoke it if we find things are unacceptable? Or is it like most codes, like mineral lands, that get reviewed every 10 years? Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue. Is there anybody else in the public that would like to speak on this subject? I'm not seeing any other hands raised. We will close the public hearing at this point and open it up for discussion within our members.
I do see one more hand raised.
Oh,
sorry. It just came up as you're saying that.
I didn't see that one. You just came in late. Okay, Chris, sorry.
No problem. Thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to ensure that the letter from Crown Castle sent this evening was received into the record with recommendations for some just observations we made from code review, applicability and consistency with federal law opportunities, as well as perhaps some further discussion around some clarity specifically in sections of the code, depending on site type. the majority of our comments were from a existing tower premise. And you know, our business, Crown Castle, is a wireless infrastructure owner and manager. And what that means essentially is that we are apartment building owners for tenants who are wireless companies from all walks of life, not just the commercial services that we're accustomed to that our handsets speak to, but law enforcement, state, local, federal agencies. We have all kinds of diverse tenants that are also tenants that need to be considered as part of any code update. We also see some opportunity for, we touch these sites a lot, or specifically our customers touch these sites a lot, trying to keep up with the demand, the growing continual growth of public demand for handsets and all the tricks that they do, and as well as new technologies that we've come to depend on to keep in touch with, you know, our loved ones and as we work and play. The pandemic, we saw an unprecedented spike, as you might imagine, in cell phone usage, and that's the kind of thing that we aim to support. To that end, because there is so many different times that we need to make modifications to our sites, new technology, which is sometimes constrained by availability of equipment, and the new technology on top of that, it's a continual catch-up game. So opportunities to streamline specifically on existing towers, if we just need to swap an antenna, add some radios, those are the sorts of opportunities that we would like to discuss further to meet the intent of the FCC and subsequent orders, which is speeding up the rapid deployment of broadband. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I'm sorry for missing you. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this? Michelle.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for this hearing. I just want to acknowledge the first speaker and his suggestion of a citizens committee to work on this process. And mainly because of what I've experienced through a county decision in the past with the marijuana ordinance, that it was completely poorly thought out when that was brought into the public. And I have great concerns that after spending $75,000 to fight that issue next to my property, that now I'm going to go into a battle with a basically a microwave tower that will bring even more harm to my family. And if you've ever tried to sleep next to a cell tower, I had insomnia for four nights just trying to sleep next to one of those. So I ask you to look into this way more deeply than you ever did with the marijuana planning, and think carefully through it and listen to the citizens. There are real concerns that have been expressed. And I just know from my experience that even though the county says there's transparency, we've had very little assistance from anybody at the county. So thank you very much for this opportunity. It was a little off the cuff just listening to you tonight. And Eric, I very much appreciate what you had to say earlier in the previous hearing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michelle. Anybody else out there? I'm not seeing any other hands. One more shot. Does anybody else like to speak on this subject? Okay, we're closing this public hearing and we're moving it back to the commissioners. Anybody like to share on that?
Well, yeah, I got some stuff.
Of course you do.
I know that we do have some time sensitive issues here, but I would hope that our time sensitive issues are not so urgent that we can't work through some of these things a little bit more diligently. And, you know, I'm the newest planning commissioner, so I don't have a lot of experience in a lot of these different areas, but outside of the SMP, this particular issue I've been contacted by more people than any other subject that we've dealt with besides SMP. And that surprises me because we did we got a lot of comment, and I got personally contacted for the smokehouse codes or for mineral lands, ag lands overlaps, or the recycled asphalt, or even the rezone for the Rochester prison. Those things, people would seek me out to tell me what's going on, but it's been nothing like this wireless code thing. So I think that there is a huge amount of interest in this particular issue, second only to SMP. So understanding that this can't, that this needs to happen sooner rather than later, the whole idea of having more public input and maybe a stakeholder group to help go through some of these draft regulations is something I would really encourage and like to see. And I don't know what the process for doing that would be. And Caitlin, I don't know if you've ever ran a stakeholder group or anything like that, but if we can set up something to accommodate this and let people have a little bit more direct input, I think that would be a good thing.
I'll just respond to that briefly, Planning Commissioner Cassino. The option to form a stakeholder group, sometimes we do that around projects, obviously. We've done that. We're using the Ag Committee for the Ag project. We did that for mineral lands. That's a call for the Board of County Commissioners. Only they can direct the work of staff and find the budget to support what usually is a facilitated stakeholder group and determine we have the capacity and budget and resources to do so. The Planning Commission is free to make a recommendation to the County Commissioners on that topic. I could actually bring that to them, you know, without bringing them the code. I could bring that a recommendation from the Planning Commission on that issue of forming a stakeholder group so they can have that discussion and have a check-in with the board. I'm happy to do that. They've also been contacted directly by community members calling for the formation of a stakeholder group. Again, that's the board's call, something that they would decide. As for this process, right now we anticipate follow-up work sessions with you, right, to work through this code and to answer the questions that you heard tonight and that you might have. So we don't have to figure out everything tonight or jump to a recommendation. We've built time into the schedule to have follow-up work sessions with you on this item.
That's great, thank you.
So Jennifer, what I'm, do we need a proposal to move this forward, or do we just go to, it seems like we need to, like what I'm hearing from the public, from commissioners, that we need to have more conversation on this, it seems like.
That's what's planned, and I see other commissioners nodding their heads. So that's certainly the plan. If there are questions that the commissioners have that are burning questions tonight that they want to put out on the table that we could come back in the next work session and provide answers to, in addition to what we heard from the public asking about, this would be a good time to put out some of those questions. But you don't, if you can't think of them right now, you're going to have multiple meetings on this one, I can almost guarantee.
I guess where I'm kind of going, do you need any type of motion to move to that point?
No.
Okay.
Do you need a motion for us to recommend to the BOCC that they establish a citizen advisory group?
You may make that motion if you so wish as planning commissioners, and I'm happy to transmit that forward to the board.
I think that's a good suggestion too, that we should pass along.
Okay, well, I would move that the Planning Commission recommends to the Board of County Commissioners that they establish a stakeholder group comprising of members of the public to advise on the wireless code update.
Second.
All those in favor, say by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any discussion on, I guess we shouldn't do that earlier. Any other discussion on this?
No, I'm just looking forward to learning more about it. I thought of tonight a couple people mentioned some documentation of suggested language that I don't think we've seen yet. So
it does seem to be quite the hot button issue, more than I was expecting. Okay, so I guess we move it on to the commission, to the board. Am I thinking right here?
Yeah, I will take this. We'll still come back to you with a follow-up work session next time, and I can report back to you if the board has had a discussion on your
Am I muted?
No, Raul, you're
am
not
I muted.
Oh, okay, what do you got?
I've been trying to speak, and I've been not heard. Let's put it that way. I wanted to make some comments on this because I saw some very important points that some of the citizens did not miss, but they didn't emphasize. Number one, we should be seeking to best serve and protect our citizens. It almost feels like we're moving forward with these proposals so long as we're within the law. The bottom line is that we should be taking more precautions rather than just adhering to the law just because it's law. I remember when I was a kid, we were being sprayed with DDT, and it was legal, and it was okay then. And radio frequency is getting more and more at a higher frequency and more penetrating. Code is not keeping up with this technology, and as such, we're not being sensible with ensuring our citizens' safety. And just protecting our legal liability is only limited until something else is discovered. So not everything that's legal is ethical, and not everything that is convenient is safe. And as many decades I spent as a safety compliance officer, moving forward, if we would have gone through with this, it would have been willfully disregarding this precautionary measures, which would have been out of compliance with the safety protocols, which are very important. Remember, microwaves were discovered by fatalities. Somebody was cooked and says, that's a good thing. So that's my point. Thank you.
Thanks, Raul. I just want to say that I think that everybody on this screen here is concerned with quality of life for everybody. We all live in this community, so we care. I guess we're moving on to, I'm sorry, I see some people raised hands, but we've closed the public hearing. Please come back to our work session, and we would love to hear from you, or send a note to staff, and they will forward it on to us. So we're like at 8:10 or so. You guys want to carry on with the SMP stuff, or you guys had enough? Move forward, keep going, raise your hand.
I think Doug needs to finish his letter.
That's what I'm asking. If we can go either way, we can get at the next meeting, or do you want to keep going?
Finishing my letter would be good, except that if we won't get to recommendations from that. So I think it would be better to wait for the next work session, finish the letter, and move right into recommendations.
Okay. Is everybody on board with that?
I'll take that recommendation, yeah.
Okay, Jennifer, I guess you're up with staff updates.
I don't have any, so that's easy.
Well, that's no good. It's supposed to be just enlightening us. Okay, so let's do calendars. How about June 16th? Everybody going to be able to make that?
I may or may not. I don't know yet. I'll let the staff know once I know.
Okay, thank you. And July 7th. You have all your fingers from 4th of July. We'll see y'all. Okay. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all, staff, for making me look good. And we'll see you guys all in a couple of weeks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Good night, all.